Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. Today, we're excited to continue our coverage of the third season of The Witcher on Netflix. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul. And for those of you who are joining for the first time, we're cousins who love to explore the worlds of fantasy and sci-fi. In the past, we've discovered the multiverse of His Dark Materials, examined the bending of Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra, and uncovered the secrets of Lovecraft Country. We also navigated the conflicts of House of the Dragon. And you can catch the coverage of seasons 1 and 2 of The Witcher in your podcast feeds.
We're looking forward to catching up with our evil adjacent babes, revisiting the most boring wizarding school in all of fiction. But most importantly, witnessing the epic music battle between Yaskier and Valdo Marx.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, I love this. This is a duel. Oh.
We'll be covering episodes 3 and 4 this week. So, spoiler alert, we'll be discussing spoilers from these episodes, the preceding 2 episodes. We will not be discussing any of the content from episode 5, which we will be covering next week, but we will talk a little bit about the books.
May all ye wail, for adult content is upon us. And nothing says you're back home better than a spa day with a bunch of mages where they all want to know the same thing. What's it like to be with the Witcher? And does it take a lifetime to learn those tricks? Let's go!
Episode 3 is called Reunion. So we split this up by character arcs because all of our major characters are spread across the continent.
Yes.
So let's catch up with Geralt and Yaskier first. They decide to take the Ciri imposter that they discovered at the end of episode 2, or rather Geralt discovered at the end of episode 2, to see Annika, a druid friend of Geralt's mother, who happens to live with another friend of his, Otto, who is a werewolf.
Yeah. Wow, shit. Okay. Major fucking plot points. He just dropped in. Oh, here's Otto the Wellworth that he saved. Here's his mom's long-lost best friend. It's just major shit.
It's a lot. I'm not quite sure why it all had to be in this episode. But, yeah, whatever. I'm assuming this will come back later. So Annika is able to give the girl, whose name is Taryn, an elixir that makes her lucid for a few minutes. But then she apparently has been possessed or something by someone or some force.
It's an off-brand, the time of contempt is nigh, the time of the, it's like an off-brand. It's like bootleg, somebody slinging their mixtapes.
It's a wish version
of
that.
Exactly.
So in the the fight that follows, which is not really a fight, she just kind of loses her stuff for a moment. Otto almost loses control. Annika is injured. And, you know, Geralt has to help, you know, sits by her bed while she wakes up. He learns that his mother, Visenya, has died. And I have wanted to call her Visenya, ever since I saw this episode. I cannot tell you guys how hard it is not to call this woman Visenya.
Oh my God.
Too much Targaryen content. I can't.
I've thought it multiple times.
So he decides to leave Taryn to go to Arethusa to get some answers about what he learned from her, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
Wild also that he's just leaving someone, just leaving a random child with somebody he hasn't seen in a long time. Just like, yo, can you mind if I leave this kid here?
How wrong, and a werewolf? How wrong can it go? How wrong can it go? Mind you, this young girl told Geralt and Yaskier that she is a novice from Arethusa. They are now going to Arethusa. And they're like, no, young woman, let's leave you here somewhere outside of Redania. I don't get it.
Yeah. But
there's a lot of unexplained shit in this episode. So let's catch up with Yen and Ciri. They go to see Yen's old friend, the owner of Giancardi Bank. Yen sends Ciri off with Fabio, the banker's apprentice, while she meets with Tisea and asks for her help. Because Ciri is Cirilla, the lion cub of Syntra, of course they get into trouble. They can't just have like a leisurely day. Like they can't just enjoy the treats in the city, see the sights. No, Ciri decides that she has to free this beast that's being held. It's a hungry wyvern. And, you know, it gets out of its cage and starts attacking people. Ciri fights the beast, eventually kills it. And, you know, then goes back to Yen and to Saiyan, the other mages. I think it's at that point, I think they're joined by Margarita and Sabrina.
I just don't understand why Ciri couldn't let it lie. Like, she's like the know-it-all, like, student. Like, she's like, this guy's out here obviously just trying to sell some tickets to his off-Broadway show. And you're out here like, no, that's not that animal. It's this. I'm like, come on, Ciri. Like, it's the worst. It's the absolute worst.
This is almost like line for line from the book.
Yeah.
And I just, I'm just like, Ciri. I was just as annoyed with her in this sequence as I was throughout the entire sequence in the book, where she's just like kind of showing off.
Yeah.
And like Yen very specifically gave her directions not to be seen.
Yeah, 100%.
So little frustrating stuff from Ciri. And she just continues to get more frustrating because that evening, because she's treated like, I don't know, a novice instead of a princess, she and Yen have this big fight where Ciri says some really cruel stuff. And, you know, she runs off because that's what teenagers do when they fight with their mom. She once again finds herself in danger and she's being chased by the Wild Hunt until Geralt comes and saves her with Ard,
what the fuck? This is like the most basic move. He's like, yo, here, let me just like run off the whole Wild Hunt with like, crazy shit. Like
they could not have wanted her. Like they, like, that must have just been an intimidation tactic by the Wild Hunt. There's no way you scare off the Wild. I have a theory that could explain this, but, like, well, let's talk about it a little bit later.
Yeah.
But, like, this made no sense to me. I was like, I don't...
That scene with her... That scene with Ciri and Yen, though, was, like... I was tough. It was a tough scene, but it also was, like, super moving at the same time. It was, like, man, rough. Rough and, yeah, I mean... Goodness. I love the relationship that's developing even in the tough spots. And it's like, you know, I thought Yen was right. Like, you have to figure out what version of yourself you need to be here. You're not a princess. It was like good stuff. I thought it was a good chin check moment.
It was great. Actually, I think that this was Yen being her most authentic that we've seen her.
Yeah.
And I thought it was also moving because it was very much like a conversation that I think a lot of young women have with their moms where they're like, why do you act like this? And they're like, so I can survive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is how I live. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to figure out who you're going to be and how you're going to move through the world. And it's a great conversation, but we're going to talk more about just like all of Yen's various interactions with different people. Cause she has a lot going on in these episodes. Like, I think that we're supposed to take the most character development from Yen.
That was a lot of work
at this point.
Agreed.
So after Geralt vanquishes the Wild Hunt with a really basic move that you learn in like the first 5 minutes of the video game, Yen, talking to Tisaya, decides like it might be a good time to bring together a conclave of mages, which we haven't seen since right before the Battle of Sadin. Let's take a little trip to Redania, where Dijkstra and Philippa learn that Vizimir has brokered a deal with Nilfgaard with the help of his beloved queen Hedwig. The price of this news is high because it costs the queen her head, literally. Like, her head is delivered in a box.
Oh, man. Dijkstra
has had her assassinated, and he's very smartly pinned that assassination on Nilfgaard, much to the disgust of Radovid, who realizes he's outmatched by Dijkstra real quick.
Real fast.
It's like, yeah, It was a good move, Radovan. So Philippa also puts together, you know, in a rather interesting intelligence session, that the girl who came, the woman who came to speak to the queen as an emissary of Nilfgaard, was the same woman that we've seen all throughout the last two seasons, who does not speak, who uses telepathy, Lydia, who is working with Rhiannes. So she puts together that the mage who is working with Rhiannes is also working with Nilfgaard. Over in Syntra, we think this is Syntra, right?
Yeah, it's Syntra. It's got to be Syntra still.
It's not super clear, but we're assuming they're still
we're
in
assuming
Syntra.
They're still
there's
in Syntra.
No reason they would... There's no reason they would go back to Nilfgaard. Okay, I just want to, because I put Syntra, but I was like, are they in Syntra?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. No, I'm with you. It doesn't. They never laid it out, but it feels like, you know, the room has Calanth vibes. You know, like she, you know, the ambiance is nice.
It does seem a little nicer than Calanth's castle, but anyway. Over in Syntra, Cahir takes Gallatin to Emir so that he can tell him about Francesca's whole thing about looking for Ciri. The Emperor asks Cahir to prove his loyalty, and by that he means killing Gallatin, which happens at the end of the episode, and Cahir is extremely distraught about it.
Now, dear listeners,
and that is episode 3.
Yeah, and dear listeners, I know you're probably wondering if there's going to be any alcohol poured out for Gallatin, and not a fucking drop. We don't know him well enough. We just met him like 2 seconds ago.
We don't know him.
Yeah, we don't know him like that. I mean, it's like hearing, you know, you're sad when you hear something on the news happen bad, but you're not pouring anything out. So he's not getting
any. Well, one thing though. So since we're talking about episode 4 as well, Applegat got to. Do we? You feel like pouring anything out for him?
I'm good.
Okay. I'm just checking in because Gallatin had a bigger role. Okay. Yeah,
I'm good.
Wait, did we pour anything out for Gage?
No, Gage took one to the back. He was like right through. Gage is gone. Like, there's some people that just like, you know what? Pish posh. You know what I mean? Like, it is what it is. Oh. And then with that, we will talk about the invitation on the island of Thaned. Yen makes her case to the Brotherhood, and they agree to hold a conclave of mages, inviting all the mages of the continent to join in a pact. Ishrit makes his way back to Aretusa, looking for the Book of Monoliths, and reunites with Triss, looking like Dave Chappelle playing Prince on The Chappelle Show. Out here like game blouses. Like,
blouses.
It is a wild do. What's going on, man?
We had way too much fun making fun of Israel via text this weekend.
Yeah, it was
great. It was like in multiple texts. Like, I was texting other people about it. Like, this poor guy's hair, it's just too much.
He is letting his soul glow. Just letting his spirit shine. You know, it's what he's doing. He apparently has history with Triss. Who knew? And realizes that all the missing novices are half elven. Did I miss something? I gotta really ask this. Did Triss and Ishrit have like a hookup that we missed? I know she introduced Geralt and him, and it was insinuated. But is this like off screen like context that we're supposed to have?
There's definitely something there. Yeah. I don't think this is just like two old friends meeting.
Yeah.
Also, and this is not clearly established in the show, but like Triss is much younger than Yen and Ishrit. Like much younger. She is like a young witch compared to the rest of them. So like I don't know what's going on here because they weren't at Aretusa together. Like we never met Triss at Aretusa.
No.
When we met Triss, she was already in the court of Temeria. So I don't know what's going on here. Let me just say. You know I've been quoting the same Downton Abbey line over and over again.
I was so ready for it.
Please, dear listener, please stay with me. During one of the final seasons of Downton Abbey, there's this whole plot line. I won't really spoil it for you, but a character named Mabel Lane Fox says, am I expected to take the discarded leavings of Lady Mary Crawley, dust off the fluff, and put them on my own plate? This is how Triss Marigold acts with Yen's men, okay? What is going on, Triss? Triss, can you get out of like these magical relationships? Like, the continent is full of men. You are fine as hell. Triss is good looking. What is going on? Also, she's a sorceress.
Yeah.
Why are you out here only interested in the men that Yen has tossed to the side?
Oh.
Or that have been tossed, Yen was tossed to the side by? I don't understand. What's going on, Triss?
Yenna. I wonder if she's heard that in his sleep. You know, like, got her up. Oh, man.
All right, rant over. I'm sorry to interrupt your summary. Continue.
So, Geralt and Yaskier and Ciri head to Aretuza and encounter two horrors on the way. First, and most importantly, Valdemarx. Oh, my God.
What a great entrance. One of the best Witcher entrances of all three seasons.
Out here looking like, what's that acapella band that everybody like used to have to put up with? What's the name of that acapella band? Pentatonix. Valdemarx out here looking like Pentatonix, okay? Coming on full fucking throat singing these songs. All right. And the second big horror which attacks the fairy is Eshna. And Ciri kills the Eshna. Valdemarx lives on to see another day. All right?
Much to Yaskier's horror. Like,
oh my God.
He's just not pleased.
He's so upset about it. So Yen makes a short trip to Redania during the funeral of Queen Hedwig to invite Philippa to the conclave. Philippa and Dougal McDeekstra pretend that they don't want to attend until they're ordered to by Vizimir. Yen plays is really great. I love it. But they were always planning to go, right? So they're kind of putting on a little bit. But I do love the way Yen played this. After the meeting, Yen walks through a portal that is corrupted. When she arrives back in Aretuza, Triss warns her against telling Taseya, which appears to annoy Sabrina. But I don't...
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
I didn't disagree with Triss saying what she's saying because she's actually still cares about Ciri's safety. She's realizing that there's something going on in some dark magic here. Sabrina, she may be actually part of the plot, right? Like there's something weird that she didn't want to come out. And I didn't really think she's like doing it. She was one who did the portal because I don't think she's that powerful. But there's someone she's connected to, and there's information she's probably protecting.
Yeah, I don't trust Sabrina, and that hurts because I really like Sabrina from like the Battle of Sodden.
Yeah,
I like her relationship with Yen. Like, but something about the way that she walked away from that interaction made me distrust her immediately.
Yeah, me too. So we'll see. We'll put a pin in that and see what happens. Geralt, Ciri, and Yen reunite, and there are beautiful reunions all around. I really particularly love this reunion because they send Yaskier and Ciri off, and then they like just kind of like mouth what they're saying, like come up with fictitious, like it's like grade A people watching, grade A fucking people watching. Mm-hmm. It's good. But it's really sweet, you know. Ciri and Yen say things like, you know, and Yen said, you know, reunite, and she apologizes, and Yen says, let's never do that again, and it's very sweet. Later on, Yaskier is disappointed when he learns that he will be babysitting versus attending the party where Valdemarx is going to be there. You know, he wanted to be on the fucking bill. He's like, yo, how did I not get like on the like docket? I want to be on the bill for the concert. It's kind of crazy.
You know what? Another thing that we should be suspicious of is Sabrina was the one who hired Valdemar.
That is true.
She's capable of anything, really.
Yeah, it's really, really true. Oh my gosh. However, he is nicely surprised when Radovid pays him a visit. It's pretty cool. You know, doesn't let him come in the house.
He couldn't get in if he wanted.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It is protected. So Kahir approaches Francesca and her people with provisions and asks to unite in their search for Cirilla. Against Dara's advice, she appears to agree. You know, Dara's, you know, blaming it on the rain. You got to blame it on something. I'm sorry. He's like really, really upset. Istrid and Triss perform a locator spell looking for the missing book of monoliths, while at the same time, Yen and Geralt come to the conclusion that Stregobor is at the center of the whole entire plot. Feeling very Scooby-Doo-ish. Then
it feels very, very Scooby-Doo-ish. like, you know, I love a good mystery, but I was like, even from episode one, I was like, it's Stregobor. I just think that it's time for Stregobor to leave this story. Yeah. So even if it isn't Stregobor, I'm good with Stregobor, you know, being got. Like, I'm tired of Stregobor.
Look, he would have got away with it too if it wasn't for you pesky kids, all right? That's it. But that evening, all dressed up, gussied up, it's about to be a party. The conclave begins with a party. Everybody's booed up on their way, except for Stregobor. And that is where the episode ends. So let's talk about some of the noteworthy things. I know you've been kind of talking and sprinkling out through the recap. But, like, let's talk about what Geralt learns in this episode. What does Geralt learn in this episode? I mean, he learns that there's a woman with a funny voice that is, like, taking these kids. And then he learns that there's always a source of magic, is what Taryn keeps saying. There's always a source of magic. So what do you think about that, the always a source of magic part?
It's got to refer to Ciri in some way.
Yeah.
I don't think the show has fully explained what the show takes that to mean. I have my own interpretation about what it might mean, but I don't know if it's going to be in line with what the show thinks. Like, this whole thing with Ciri's magic has been all over the place.
Yeah.
And so since they're creating canon around it, you know, especially with the notion that Ciri's blood is has something in common with the Witcher mutation, like helps create the Witcher mutation. Although that wasn't really proven last season, it was a theory. And you get Geralt kind of like positing some of the theories from last season almost as if they are true. I just don't know what to think about this comment about there's always a source of magic. So I'm going to withhold my analysis until the show tells us more, because I think that was like a very intentional line. We're definitely going to get more about it later.
Yeah, I mean, I think like for me, the first place I went to was same as you, is like they talk about the source and like, you know, like her magic not coming from the same place as other people, that she potentially be a source. At least that's what Triss was talking about last season. So I kind of just immediately went there in my brain. You know what I mean? Like, okay, that's what's possibly going on. But yeah, I don't know. We just don't know. I know that may all ye wail, for the destroyer of nations is upon us, is what she also says, which is pretty much like, you know, verily I say unto you, the sword of the axe. It's like she is like out here like really, really like impersonating Ciri. You know what I mean? So what do you think of that? Like, destroyer of nations is upon us? I don't know.
That sounds like That sounds like a elven prophecy, but also possibly related to Falca. Like, I don't know how to take some of this stuff because I don't think it's perfectly clear in the books, or at least the books I've read so far, because I haven't completely finished the series. But I just, obviously, I think that is about Cirilla as well. But where that language is coming from, I'm not clear. And I will say that does not sound like something that Stregobor would say.
No, I know that should have been a clue, right? Because it feels like Stregobor is one note. He's just like, these elves got to go, right? He's like, that's it. So to me, like, this is like, there's always a source of a magic, you know, the destroyer of worlds is here. I truly, destroyer of worlds, and also when we're going to get into some stuff here in a minute about what was going on with the Wild Hunt, I think that they're like trying to weave these things together to create not distrust, but to create like kind of like ambiguity that makes us feel like, is Ciri more connected to Falca? Like what we were talking about previous episode, I kind of feel like this is like heading, you know, they're trying to create some mystery here around that. So anyway.
Yeah. And I actually think that the Destroyer of Nations comet sounds like the Wild Hunt. So was this whole thing from start to finish? Here's what I was thinking when I rewatched this episode. Okay, so we know that going to the castle to find the mage was a trap in the first place. Mm-hmm. Was this some kind of weird plant to kind of get Geralt thinking that this was actually maybe the Wild Hunt was behind it? Because that sounds very much like what the Wild Hunt says to Ciri later, which is, you are death.
Yeah.
Like so I don't know. It's kind of what's interesting about this story, and what I really do appreciate about how it's written, is that Ciri's like existence means different things to different factions. Yeah. So Francesca's out here saying she is our salvation. We have to find her because she's going to bring about the time when the elves can take this continent back. But then you have the Wild Hunt saying that she is death. You have this, all the other prophecies. Like, it's just, it's muddled. And it sometimes makes you wonder, as a reader, as a watcher, do we want Ciri to succeed?
We don't know.
We just don't know.
We just don't know.
Like, we know that she's very powerful, but we haven't seen the extent of her powers, ability to destroy, aside from the monoliths, right? Oh, I guess actually I take that back, because there were those men who attacked mm-hmm. her in season one, and she destroyed them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Yen seems more dangerous to me than Ciri right now. So I guess I'm curious where they take all of this. And the other thing too is, like us, I feel like what Geralt is learning, what he learns in this trip, is muddled. So someone is taking these novices from Arethusa, right? It's someone who works at Arethusa. There's the woman with the funny voice, which we think is Lydia.
Yeah.
Could that be someone else? I couldn't think of anyone else.
I think it would have to be her. I mean, that's where it's leading me to believe, but it could be... Well, I mean, do we think Sabrina's voice is funny?
No, nasally. Maybe.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I think it has to be the woman who can't, you know, like, she has a funny voice because her face is not really real. So like, I would think that's what it, yeah, 100%. That's what I would go with. Yep.
Yeah. So there's just like some confusion here with this young woman, Taryn. And the elven blood thing is also interesting. Annika picks it up, I think, right before Isdred and Triss discover it. And it's, you know, it's interesting that all the girls who are being taken from Arethusa, that they have that in common. I guess that is supposed to make them more convincing Cirilla's?
Yeah, I mean, she's saying like there's a combination of chaos, elven magic, and druid magic. And she specifically says it would take lifetimes to acquire all of these tricks, all of this understanding. And I think like that's, he's trying to, they're basically experiments. Like he's using all these different magical things to basically say, okay, well, maybe that's all of the magic is the source. So maybe I need to like try to combine all these things to see how I can control the source. Maybe, I mean, whoever this person is. So I don't know. It's kind of, like you said, it's muddled, but I think people are starting to unpack that there's a lot at work here, more than just what meets the eye, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, one of the key things here is that Triss is also learning about who she can trust, and really that no one can be trusted. She's really like starting, she's also learning, and she's starting to learn that like you can't just go out here just spilling information. And she wasn't always so like close cards to the vest, you know what I mean? Like she was pretty much like, when we first meet Triss, she's trying to convince Geralt to help Faustus, you know what I mean? So it's interesting to see her changes as well.
Although in that episode as well, Triss hides that she hides Geralt from Faustus.
Yeah.
So she has it in her. I don't know what to think of Triss this season. I think she's sincere in her concern for both Cirilla and for Yen. I feel like she could be a little bit more forceful with the missing novice thing, which I want to believe that Tisea is not like part of this missing novice nonsense, because I like Tisea, but the way she kind of hand waves the concern is also alarming.
Yeah.
And then Triss immediately trusts Izrid. And I'm kind of like, why? Like, aside from their joint, whatever they may have had that we don't happened off screen, I don't understand why she tells Yen not to trust anyone and then she immediately trusts him.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know either. I don't know what that's about, but maybe, like you said, their off screen history may play into it.
Yeah, and she knows he cares about Yen because when Yen goes to the portal, that's what she tells him, right? Mm-hmm. She's not like something fishy is going on, blah, blah, blah. She's like, Yen was hurt. You know, Yen was attacked, and he immediately is like,
is she okay?
Is she exactly, which I would have been like, Triss, sweetheart, like see,
yeah. Yen,
see that these feelings are not resolved. Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
So let's get back on track for a second and just unpack what we know so far. So as we mentioned, we know that the magic that enchanted this girl is a combination of chaos, druid magic, you know, like elven magic, like there's many things going on here. Mm-hmm. We know that she is a novice from Aretusa. So whoever is behind this has access to Aretusa. Mm-hmm. We know that the portals that are corrupted are also some kind of magic that Yen and Philippa, Triss hasn't actually encountered one yet, but that Yen and Philippa have noted is real different from what they're used to. Then we have the stuff that Philippa puts on together on her own while she's seducing the queen's attendant, whose name I don't know that we got.
I don't think so either. I didn't get her name.
I didn't catch her name. But whatever, like she assassinated the queen. So she figures out this thing about Lydia being the person who met with the queen. And therefore, Rience is in collusion with Nilfgaard, which we later see that Rience is not pleased about.
100%. And we also...
That he did not want to be part of some kind of Nilfgaardian plot. And Lydia's response is kind of like, well, there's a difference between being partners with them and using
100%.
Them.
100%. Yeah. And we also know that the queen's assassination leads to like northern kingdoms, like basically like puts Nilfgaard on the shit list, right? We know we learn that after he assassinates that it's a great strategy because now Nilfgaard is like back where Redania wants them to be, or where Redanian intelligence wants them to be. So there's a strategy that's at play with all that information. Oh, and last thing I would say is we also know that there's a conclave that's going to happen because that's what takes people there to that's what takes Yen to Redania to tell them that she wants them to come, is that, hey, they're actually having this thing. So we know that that's coming down the pike, right? So there's going to be a gathering.
And that Philippa and Dijkstra were talking about attending that conclave before Yen came up, because Philippa and Dijkstra have an idea of what may be going on. Dijkstra, as they're talking, Philippa says, I'd rather not go to crash the conclave without all of the pertinent information, something like that. I mean, that's not a direct quote. And then when Yen shows up, Philippa's like, oh, the conflict clave? Like, who would even attend? Something's really like amiss here. And next week, I'm sure we will unpack a lot of this, because I think all of this will be important to understanding the final episode in this volume. But there was so much packed into the dialogue here that like it was a little hard to follow at points. That's why I wanted to lay it out, because it was like you're getting all these little pieces of information across these two episodes coming from different sources. And some of it I don't think is true.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's some diversion tactics being employed here for sure. No question.
Yeah, there's like some red herring elements to some of it, which is why I have Isdred on my list of people to watch. I trust Tress. I don't trust him.
Never have I trusted Isdred. He's a...
And he's also, you know, evil adjacent, because he's Stregobor's... Yep. What do we want to call him?
He's a minion. We'll call him a minion. Okay? We'll call him a freaking minion.
Protégé.
Yeah, I guess. Protégé would be a nice way to call him a minion. For sure. He's totally a minion. No, I like...
Oh, and one more thing, since you mentioned the conclave. Stregobor was the only mage who didn't agree to the conclave. By the end of Yen's little speech, they're all in agreement except for Stregobor.
Yeah, I agree. And they were like, fuck that guy, and sent the invitations hella fast. Like, those invitations were out before he even could bat an eye. They're like, I don't give a fuck.
I really appreciated Margarita, and I think it was Sabrina, like actually like stuffing envelopes. Yeah. I was like, yeah. Yeah. There's no fast. It confirms there's no faster way to get paper invitations.
Oh man, so good. I mean, and the other thing that we know that is mysterious, but is that people are starting to recognize the guy who was the boat, who was the boat sailor, and even after Sirius like coming gets encountered with the Wild Hunt, they're starting to recognize that the Wild Hunt is riding again. And and that means that war is coming. I mean, like, that whole scene on the boat gave me serious old Nan vibes. When he goes into, like, a whole, the sailor who's off the boat, like, goes into, like, the whole, like, thing around what it means that the Wild Hunt is around. And then he gets, like, you know, afterwards, like, snaps out of it and just goes back to being a sailor. It's, like, really intense. But it really gives you some backstory of how the world sees the Wild Hunt's appearance.
So we're going to talk about the Wild Hunt later. I want to come back to that because I have questions about how the Wild Hunt is being shown in the show. But we should finish talking about Redania's strategy here, because I think we're on a good run with that. But there was one piece that I only caught on second watch. Did you catch Applegate's message?
I did not. What did it say?
Okay, so Dijkstra gives him this message and tells him to give it directly to the Navy commander. The fate of the continent depends on it.
Okay.
When he is... he repeats the message, which is a head of gold and an arse of iron. Which I'm like, I don't know what to make of that. Maybe I'm not thinking deeply enough about it, but I don't really know what to make of that. Like, is that supposed to be a reference to Siri? Like,
I don't that's know what I thought about. He was saying, but that's another thing. Good.
But then when he is killed towards the end of the episode, in exactly the way that Siri thought he would be killed, he is reciting, reinforcements will be needed at Aretusa by dawn. Multiple times. And so now I have other questions. Who killed him? Did he just get caught up in something, or did Francesca, like, that scene is right after Francesca and Kahir talk. Is it Francesca's folks who kill him? Like, clearly he had met with the Navy commander, I believe, and was on his way back to Redania, maybe. Again, there's so much to unpack in this episode. I'm just like, there's like too much. Huh. So, reinforcements will be needed at Aretusa by dawn.
Well, a head of gold and an arse of iron could also be the queen's head, and the iron could mean send reinforcements. That's a reach, but I'm thinking, is there anything else other than like a crude reference to freaking Cirilla of Centra, but that is meant to have? I mean, because that's where your mind would go right away. But like, there is that, like the queen's head was gold, like, she, you know, and they're basically like saying send iron, send like military.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's happening here.
I don't know.
The piece that I thought was again, this is why I think there's like some red herring stuff, right? Because at first I was like trying to figure out what this head of gold and ask an arse of iron meant, but then I was like, wait, actually, what he's saying when he's killed is more interesting. Reinforcements will be needed at Aretusa by dawn. That's why, you know, like, that is a huge red flag that something bad is going to happen at the conclave.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just thought that, like, I thought it was interesting that all of Dijkstra and Philippa's work seems to be coming together at this conclave, even though they were playing like they didn't want to go. And I wonder if Yen hadn't shown up at the funeral, did they have another reason to tell Vizimir that they were going? Because he's the reason that they're going by his mind. But like, was Philippa just going to accept the invitation regardless and tell him, I decided to go after all? Like, I'm a little bit, I don't know. What was their plan B if Yen never shows up? I guess they were counting on Yen coming.
I mean, they are Redanian intelligence. They know what she had for breakfast this morning.
That is true. When he said that, I was like, no, you don't, bro. Come on. Come on, man. Come on. I was like, come on, Dijkstra.
Oh, my God.
You do not know what Yennefer Vengerberg had for breakfast.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, that was... Listen, I just find it hard when I'm watching these scenes sometimes not to just flash back to Dougal. I'm just like, yeah, it's Dougal. That's why he's always going to... Dougal McDijkstra is my guy. I don't like him, but I respect it. I respect it. I mean... Here's the thing I want to let's do something that I think is very important to address. Very important to address. Yen's apology tour. You have strong feelings about this. We've talked about this throughout. Why is this show making, or even better, why are the characters in this show making Yen apologize for saving their life?
I'm so angry about this. I'm struggling to put my thoughts together, even though I wrote down some notes. Like, that's how angry I am.
Oh.
So let's just start. Let me organize my thoughts this way. Let's start with her conversation with Taseya. Okay, fine, whatever. Taseya is her mom, basically. She's the only mother she's ever really known. And Yen has had kind of a, she takes her for granted, you know? And I think that conversation kind of demonstrates that Yen is realizing now that she took Taseya for granted because Yen now has Siri to look after. Mm-hmm. But let's just go through what Yen actually did in the last three seasons of this show, because I don't want anyone to be muddled about whether or not our girl actually has to apologize to these people. Mm-hmm. All right. So at Taseya's behest, Yen participates in the Battle of Sodden. Yen didn't want to be there. Mm-hmm. Strongly said, we shouldn't get involved. All of this is garbage anyway. But because her girl wanted to go, Yen said, okay, I'm in. After they take heavy losses from Fringilla, who was literally sacrificing other mages to use fire magic, Yen then saves the day by tapping into fire magic herself, thus costing her her powers. Mm-hmm. She is then taken prisoner by the enemy, narrowly escapes by her wits, not even like, you know, makes it back to Aretuza without any portals or anything, walks in through the front door. And they treat her with suspicion because she's been gone for a minute. And she's like, but I was captured. I don't understand. I was prisoner of Fringilla, and then I was prisoner of Francesca. Like, I was captured. Then to prove her loyalty, which Stregobor gets everybody all up into a whole tizzy about, because of Falca, who Yen is not related to. Yen is not related to Falca. In fact, Stregobor even says that when Isdred is like, what are you trying to say? Like, Yen is related to Falca. He's like, no.
Stregobor is Otto Hightower. It could be another Magor. He's fucking Otto Hightower. It's so fucking crazy.
So after that, they make her prove her loyalty by executing Kahir, also a war criminal, like a prisoner of war, not a war criminal, a prisoner of war, although Kahir is probably a war criminal too. But like, also a prisoner of war, publicly in front of the Northern kings and queens. Okay. Yen says, nah, I'm not about this, but also just doesn't want to show them that she doesn't have her magic. Kind of a sore spot for her. Mm-hmm. Let's Kahir go and escapes. Now she's coming back and she's basically made to go on this apology tour. What is she apologizing for? The only people that she owed an apology were Geralt and Cirilla. That's it. Yeah. She didn't do anything to any of these other people. Y'all would all be dead if Yen didn't save the day in the Battle of Sodden. So why is she apologizing to you? She is a hero. I don't understand it. It's super confusing. You've made the point that Yen knows this and is like just trying to make a play for support for Siri.
That's what I think.
I fully agree with you. I fully agree with you. I think that's what Yen is doing. I take exception with Vilgefort, Stregobor, Fringilla's uncle, who I'm never going to learn his name. And Taseya acting as if Yen should apologize, has something to apologize for.
And Vilgefort out here talking about you abandoned Taseya multiple times. She didn't. She didn't do that at all. Never. Actually, she did a lot of things opposite to that. She was discriminated against by Stregobor. She went through an enchantment to make herself beautiful without any pain relief. Like, very hard stuff. Like, one of the most painful scenes in this whole freaking show. And she was placed in Erden as an advisor to the king. The king then sent an assassin to kill her and the queen. She had to like save them, go to Portia. He's trying to kill his own kid. So after that, she lives on her own and tries to make her way in the world. And Tisea reaches out to her only when it's convenient. And Yen's like, no, I'm good. I don't want to like, I don't really want to deal with you. But so to me, like everyone is fucking wild for like, I'm with you on that. But again, I do think that Yen is aware of all of this. And she's just, this is supposed to be like her way of like trying to suss out what's really going on. Cause she knows somebody over here has to be involved in this. And she wants to get to the core of it to save Siri.
I just really hate it. I really hate the apology tour. It's really irritating to me. I was irritated by the fact that after Yen opened her wrist to save Siri's life, that Geralt didn't forgive her right away. But okay, we're putting that behind us. So this, her groveling to the Brotherhood is super annoying to me. I just don't care for it. And I'm not sure that I believe it's driving the plot forward in a meaningful way. There were a dozen other ways to get to the conclave without Yen having to grovel her way back to the likes of Stregobor. That's really what I have a problem with. That's really my number one problem.
Oh, man. But you know what, though? It was kind of cool to see Yen gather herself. And that's why I said I think she knows. Like, her normal instinct would have been to lash out when they were, like, when they were being, like, defensive. And she realized that's not going to get me what I want. And so that's why I think she understands what's going on, because she composed herself when they were talking about having the conclave. And she was like, all right, I want to thank you all for letting me back. And so this is strategy, I think, more than like reality. She's catering to their egos and their beliefs more than anything else, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I really can't. I can't stand the Brotherhood. I'm with Siri on this. Like, these people suck. Like, they're just awful. Like, I really like Tisea and I really like Triss, but I just, the rest of them, I've had enough. They are so entitled and they're also ineffectual, because they seem to think that Yen is the reason that the Northern Kings don't trust them. That is posited multiple times, including by Yen herself at one point. No, the Northern Kings, you always had a problem with the Northern Kings and Queens, because Calanthe didn't want a mage in her court at all. Obviously, the King of Irden tried to kill his mage. Like, you've always had a problem. This is not a new problem.
Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, it's complicated with what Yen is going to have to try to do, because she's also trying to teach Siri. I think one of the, like we talked about a little bit earlier, but I think one of the like the keys here is that she's trying to navigate a world where she knows a lot of the ins and outs and the who's who and what could be at the core of who's trying to actually do damage to what is now her family. And at the same time, she's trying to rekindle and build back the trust of Geralt, where, you know, you can't always be the most squeaky clean kind of version of yourself in Aretuza, while also trying to exhibit and parent and show Siri things about leadership. And I think that she's actually pulling this off very well to this point. Like, I actually think like a lesser version of a mage from Yen would not have been able to do this. You know what I mean? Period. Like
I agree. You know? I agree. So yeah, Yen is the right person for this task. Obviously Triss wasn't up to it. And it's, Yen has not had that much more success training Siri, but she has bonded with Siri in a way that is going to be instrumental. And Siri gets a ton of advice in this episode from all the adults around her. All of it's really good. You know, Yen basically tells her that if you want to be a leader, you don't get to pick who you lead.
Yeah.
You don't get to pick the other people around you. You have to learn how to react to them.
Yeah.
Geralt had a really beautiful quote too when they were on the ferry. I'm going to read it verbatim because it's just really good. A life has real meaning. It's warm skin and a beating heart and should only be taken as a last resort. Righteousness can easily become rage. Justice can become scorn. If you want to be a queen, be a queen. I think you'll make an excellent one.
It was so good.
It was very like season six Game of Thrones Tyrion to Daenerys thing, like that kind of energy. Like it also lays out his neutrality. Like I guess that's his value, mm-hmm. his mission, in better terms than he had previously laid it out, which is basically like as a Witcher, we don't see borders. Mm-hmm. Our loyalty is to life. It's not to this king or that king. It's to preserve the most important thing, which is living. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And then I also really loved Yaskier's advice to her, which was all these people are talking to you about the future and who you're going to be. I think you're pretty great who you are right now. Like maybe just be a teenager.
Yep. I like that. I love that as well. I love that as well. And I mean, she's getting a lot of good advice, like you said, and the Yen feedback about leading people was really strong and saying like, you know, there's always going to be a lot of people who are like looking for power and manipulation. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but she was also kind of telling her something there, like you're going to be a queen one day and this is who's going to be around you. Like you got to figure out how to deal with those things. And all of them are giving her advice from different angles. And it was fun to see Ciri like kind of say, we've been focusing so much on my magic. Like, what about my witchering skills? What about my hunting skills? And to see her like legit, how brave she is, like, you know, do the job. You know what I mean? Like, as Yaskier said, while Geralt sat on his ass. So it was like really cool. It's a good run of episodes for all of them. You know, I really love it.
Also, hysterical when she told Valdo Marks to shut up.
Great. Oh my God.
It was so good. She was like, you're gonna disturb the Eshna. So good. So I just want to touch briefly on the Wild Hunt stuff because we said we were going to talk a little bit about it. And I want to posit a couple of theories here. Okay. Maybe not theories, but some wild speculation, because I don't know where the show is taking this any more than anyone else. But okay, so you brought up the ferryman and bringing up the fact that the Wild Hunt is related to a war coming. Mm-hmm. So the Wild Hunt does make appearances on the continent. We know that. They've done that all through history. I believe there was something about them having appeared before Falca started her rebellion. But they appear as specters and really far away. They never appear close. They never, like, they don't take necessarily like a physical form. It was made quite a big deal of here that they did take a physical form because one of them left behind a piece of their armor or clothing when Geralt banished them with Ard. My theory here is that the Wild Hunt didn't really actually want Ciri. But I have some questions about how the show is handling this depiction, because Geralt makes that comment about how they must have come through whatever door Cirilla left open when she took them there in season two. Okay, that makes sense for their physical form. That doesn't make sense for how easily he was able to get rid of them. Like, you would think that Ard would work more on their spectral form than on if they were physically there. And then, like, I don't know, there was some kind of notion of, like, the monsters that were let in by the monoliths. It was that specific monolith, and they appeared at the same monolith. So are the, is the Wild Hunt just able to like portal in wherever, like Ciri just left a door open that they can access wherever, whenever? Like, I just don't, some of this magic needs to make sense, and I'm not sure I think this does.
Yeah, I mean, there's something odd and oddly enough connecting the Wild Hunt and Ciri, not just in story, but in almost magically as well. Because, you know, that line is, that line captured my attention right away. Like, yes, we are corpses. She just kept saying, you're just corpses, you're just corpses. And they respond, they can hear her. Like, she's not close enough to really be able to hear. So they're like, honestly, psychically hearing her. And she said, yes, we are corpses, but you are death itself. So, and we mentioned that earlier, but like to say death itself is like, they're almost insinuating when I heard that, that, yeah, we come from you. Like, we come from you. Like, so like, we're corpses, sure, but you made us corpses, whatever you are. And that's kind of what I got from their insinuation. And I don't know whether it's that they were physically there or they were just like, the art thing maybe made that piece of clothing maybe hit the ghost version and then made it a physical form more than they were actually in physical form. But then he also puts his hands on her shoulder. So I don't know. It seems, it's very weird. There's something that it's not, that needs to be explained more, because he does touch her.
Right. And so I just think it's interesting because you have the ferryman here reminding us that the Wild Hunt has been seen before. They're not like a completely, you know, unknown quantity in the continent, but they don't usually appear. They don't appear that close and in body, from my understanding. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting because I don't, I'm not sure what to take from the fact that they were vanquished so easily, aside from like they needed to get rid of them. And that's like a, you can see the writers in the room sort of scenario. Or is this part of the story? I don't want to get into like, this is not a show, I think, that warrants a type of like theory crafting that like a Game of Thrones or Lost or any of those types of shows or The Leftovers or anything like that. But it's a curious thing because it's like they have other signs that Geralt could have used. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the part. It's like, maybe we're getting too caught up on like what he used to vanquish her. Cause like you said, it could just been as simple that they weren't ready to take her yet. They weren't ready to make their move, that this was more about, just making their presence felt. You know what I mean?
And I just want to say, in the book, this goes down differently. Like, the, I know I said earlier that a lot of this stuff from this episode is verbatim from the book. That is true. But there were a couple of things that were confusing, which is like, Yen also rescues Ciri. And so not having Yen go after Ciri after she leaves is a little strange. And then having her automatically just know that Geralt is bringing her. But it was like, it was the Wild Hunt, Ciri and Yen who, I'm sorry, it was Geralt, Ciri and Yen working together to kind of vanquish the Wild Hunt in the book. This, like, Geralt does it by himself, was a little strange to me. And I think it creates more questions than it necessary. Like, I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to move Yen. Maybe it would have caused too much confusion to move Yen from what she was doing with the Conclave to then, you know, being on that road with Ciri, because then she would have had to go back. She would have still had to do the Redanian thing. But it definitely, I was like, I don't understand what just happened.
Yeah, I mean, but
like, the Wild Hunt is scary. They're much scarier than Amir. They're much scarier than Kahir. Like, they're scary. They're otherworldly villains who want Ciri. So all of these other factions are not is nearly as terrifying as the Wild Hunt. And then like one sign from Geralt and they are like, oh, bye. God forbid we go up against a Witcher. Like, I don't, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I agree. And I mean, like, this exchange on the boat, we kind of like, I think it's important to like, because I made the joke that it reminded me of, you know, old Nan, but it does, because she goes, old Nan in Game of Thrones goes, what, you know, what do you know about the Long Night? And she starts going into the whole spiel. And here he does something, the ferryman does something different. He goes something similar. He goes, no one's ever seen them ride amongst us. This is different. Humans against halflings, dwarves against elves, a full-on bloody massacre, no survivors. But perhaps it's best to leave fortune-telling to the soothsayers. Like, so he's explaining that this has happened before, and this is what happened. There were halflings against humans against halflings, dwarves against elves, and a full-on bloody massacre with no survivors. So I'm not saying he was possessed by anything. He's actually telling the tale the way the world understands it. And so, like, to me, like, that's like kind of foreshadowing that, hey, something crazy has happened like this before and everyone should be on guard.
Yeah, totally. And so I guess we should look at the Wild Hunt kind of like looking at the Night King, right? Yeah. Like, we should be looking at them as the magical big bad, and perhaps, I mean, that's a little tricky in the story because they're like a lot of the antagonists, I won't say they're bad, because I don't think Francesca's actually mm-hmm. bad, but she's clearly an antagonist, are magical and have magical abilities. But I think that this otherworldly mm-hmm. big bad is more, I won't say important, but like will loom over the story longer than perhaps Stregobor or whoever's kidnapping the mages or any of that. I just think that it's interesting that they had this little almost cameo after having such a prominent part in the finale.
Yeah.
Like, we're four episodes in and we've just seen the Wild Hunt again. That's kind of crazy, right?
It is crazy.
It's kind of nuts. So I just wanted to unpack that a little bit.
Yeah. I agree.
Shall we talk about druids?
We can, but I want to say one thing before we get into another magical realm. One last thing that I think we didn't talk about that I think is important to this, like, kind of just mention. We don't have to go deep into it. What do you think about Taseya looking into Ciri's eyes? And most times when she has the girls look at her, the person who's the mage bleeds out of their eye, like how Yen did. This time it's Taseya. And Taseya makes no mention of it, and she doesn't tell Yen and doesn't say anything. That insinuated to me that she knows that this girl's magic is different because she makes no mention of it and it doesn't spook her at all. What do you think?
I'm so glad you brought this up because it also raises another point that happened right before that. So I'll come back to that. I think what this was supposed to indicate to us was that, so Yen tells us when she's fighting with Ciri that Taseya is one of the most powerful sorceresses on the continent, mm-hmm. that you should be grateful that she's even willing mm-hmm. to take you on as a novice. I think what we're supposed to take from this is that Ciri is more powerful mm-hmm. than Taseya, mm-hmm. which would be great if Ciri knew how to control her abilities.
Yeah, agreed.
Which, like, Geralt very, like, fatherly is like, once you accept who you are, you'll be able to control. Spoiler alert, Geralt, that's not how this works. Like, that is, accepting her abilities is not going to be the thing.
But cool for Geralt to finally listen to Yaskier, because he was saying that to him and he just basically stole Yaskier. He's good at repurposing other people's words for his own purposes in different conversations. Like, really wild.
Truly. I did want to bring up as kind of a more minor point what happens right before this. Before Ciri rejoins Yen and before all the stuff of the Wyvern happens, And then after, she meets a young woman who praises her fighting ability and then steals her money. Which I was like, oh, I like a scrappy character. That my understanding based on the casting is that that young woman is a character called Mistel who will come back later and is kind of important to series story. So that meet cute was not just like an aside, like that character is important.
So they're not just out here in the continent just highlighting the stick up kids. Okay, got it.
Poor Fabio, because when I read the book, I actually thought Fabio was going to be like a main character. I don't know if we're ever going to see that kid again. But yeah, he tried his best. Series a lot to handle.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like him and the guy who like she gave credit for like killing the monster when he didn't do shit. You know what I mean? Like she was like, look at him, he's a brave man. So let's talk druids.
All right. So we met our first druid. Well, actually, no, we didn't meet our first druid. We met a druid by name, which is Annika. But actually, we've met a druid in this story before. We just didn't know that they were a druid. So I thought it would be important to kind of unpack what the druids are, because we already have mages. So it's kind of important that we establish who these other magical people are. So the druids in the Witcher universe are a secretive group of individuals who possess a deep knowledge and mastery over nature. They're really deeply connected to the natural world, and they draw their strength and wisdom from like forests, rivers, mountains, whatever the habitat around them provides. They also seek to maintain the balance between humans and the environment. So their history dates back to the conjunction, as many of you know, the various groups do. And they had like a similar influence to mages. They were leaders and advisors for monarchs and also would just like lead communities who were fleeing the monsters who came after the conjunction. Eventually, their practices were seen as kind of like archaic and their influence declined. However, in the current timeline, you can find druids still in... I'm going to botch this because it's pronounced two different ways on the show and in the video game. Skellig, I think, is how the show pronounces it.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll go with Skellig, which is where King Iced was from. And they inhabit like secluded groves, and they hold over this like a sacred forest there. There is a whole quest in the game where you meet up with one of the druids. Mm-hmm. It turns out that Ciri's original mentor, Malsak, was actually a druid. He came from the Skellig court with Iced. So they play a super significant role in the Witcher 3 game. And hopefully we'll see more of them in the show. We still haven't seen Skellig at all. Like they're just like not present in any of this conflict. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to either go there or to at least acknowledge like where they fall. Because they're kind of an important kingdom.
I love it. Yeah, no, I agree. And it's been mentioned multiple times. I think it's going to be a big reveal. You know what I mean? Like, so that'll be maybe, hopefully. I hope it is.
Yeah, I mean, Ciri has a lot of history with Skellig. And I think we talked about this in one of our previous episodes. Like, that is, like, Skellig had a role in the death of Pavetta. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Dooney, who, you know, turned out to be fine. but
Hedgehogs.
He's... Dooney's character, there's a few characters I think they've written is like too unhinged this season. I would say Dooney and Francesca are the two that stick out. Just like a little, like bring it down a notch. Like, do you have to be so monstrous all the time?
No, you don't. And Frangilla proves that by living her best life in a tavern. You know what I mean? Like, she's just out here just enjoying life. out here, the dance parties. When it turned up, I was like, look at this. They got a, yo, I thought they were going to break on into full like reggae and dance. I was like, yo, this is amazing. I love the whole musical accompaniment of that scene is amazing. But
The music this season has been pretty good.
Sans Valdo Marks. Sans.
Valdo Marks, I'm not going to lie. Their songs are kind of like his songs are kind of catchy.
Blasphemy. Heresy.
The songs are kind of catchy.
Yeah. I mean, the one that's coming up, is we'll talk about it next week. The one that's coming up is.
But even the one that they started on the ship and Siri was like, shut up, was kind of catchy. I was like, oh, this song kind of slaps.
So good. Well, that is going to do it for us. We are like, you know, speeding along on this Witcher journey. We're so glad you're here with us. If you want to reach out to us, please reach out to us at kinfolklore@gmail.com, kinfolklorepod, on Instagram and Facebook. We'd love to have a Threads account, but you're not allowed to have any Threads accounts for like businesses yet. What's up with that? Come on, Zuck. And and we're just happy to be doing this with y'all. So until next time.
Bye, everyone.